The San Jose Sharks Audio Network is on 24 hours a day. Whether you're in the office or on the go, make sure that you download the Sharks SAP Center app and hit listen anytime. You can also find us on your computer by going to sjsharks.com/listen. If it's a game broadcast, breaking news, or a player feature, the place to find it is right here on the San Jose Sharks Audio Network.
You're listening to the Sharks Audio Network. Now, here's your host, Ted Ramey.
All right, we now have joining us on the Sharks Audio Network, it is the Dans, Dan Ruzanowski and Dan Boyle, as we talk about the Sharks at the halfway point, way better than a year ago. They've already matched their win total, and I have a two-part question. So, Mr. Boyle, because I can't call you both Dan, it's going to get very confusing. Boiler, I will start with you, and Dan, I want you to think about your answer, Mr. Rusinowski. Jesus, this is going to be fun. So this is the two-part question. Why are the Sharks going to make the playoffs? Why are the Sharks not going to make the playoffs? Ooh. So Boiler, we'll start with you here.
All right. Why they are going to make the playoffs is because they probably have the best or one of the top three best players on the planet. I think as long as he's healthy, I'm going to do the old knock on wood here. As long as he's healthy, he gives that team a chance. He's that good that he can make up for some of the deficiencies on the rest of the team. And I think in net, I think we see an Askarov with a goalie that's kind of, I think, has taken some huge steps even from the beginning of the year, where after a mistake, I feel like his game has kind of, you know. So I think between the goaltending that I think is pretty strong, where it hasn't been the last few years, and Celebrini and company, I will call them. So you got, you know, I don't want to take away from Smith and some of the other guys that are doing well, but that's why they'll make the playoffs. Why they won't is because I think you got to have depth to get through there. And again, sticking with that injury health theme, if any of those top guys go, right now Smith's down, but should Macklin go down for a little bit, or, you know, a top defenseman, or, you know, I don't think there's enough depth there yet where they could sustain the pace of play that needs to be in order to get into the playoffs. So I think it would be a depth issue should they not be able to get in the playoffs.
Ruzy, same question to you. Why will they? Why won't they?
Why will they? I think for many of the reasons that Dan just mentioned, you can't discount the fact that Macklin Celebrini is responsible for over 50% of the points. That's a good and a bad thing, obviously. It's impressive, but it's also indicative of where the Sharks have to improve a little bit, which they have been actually doing in recent games in some respects. But the other factor besides the goaltending is that they are developing some of their depth now because of injuries to people like Will Smith. He's out. Chernyshov steps in, shows that he can do it. Pavel Regenda getting recalled from the American Hockey League and having net front presence, which is something I think is going to improve the Sharks' secondary scoring. That's another factor. The fact that Mike Greer has given the team a real boost by signing Alex Wennberg to a contract extension at the halfway point of the season and taking away any mystery as to his status, that's another shot in the arm. So you got all those things going on that are positive. But I'd say that the one thing that I would keep them from making the playoffs is a really simple one, that they're not ready to make it as a team. And we'll find out if they're ready for it. Sometimes you make it when you're not ready for it. But I think that this team, if they make it, they will be ready to make it and will be ready to make some noise right at the start. But it's a long road and you have to stay healthy, knock on wood. You also have to make sure that those pieces that you're developing continue to get better. And I think that they've got the right attitude for it, for sure. But I think that there's still a long way to go. And, you know, you look at the schedule here leading up to the Olympic break. It's a couple of back-to-backs in there, including one as we record this now that starts here with the Columbus Blue Jackets and then down to Los Angeles to take on the Kings, a team that you're fighting for playoff positioning. So all of those things have to kind of go together. And that's the one thing that'll keep them out, is that if there are too many things that have to fit together for them to get in, that might keep them just short. But still, whether they make it or not, we're seeing remarkable progress for this team, and we're seeing the right direction for sure.
Boiler, about 11 months ago, this team was trading Cody Ceci and Mikhail Granlund, which signaled the start of what was a more active sell-off than what people had anticipated. But now they're just signing Alex Wennberg. And I'm just curious, what sort of a reverberation within the dressing room does that have? And is also maybe Mr. Ferraro thinking to himself, hey, I want my agent to be working on that extension for me if this is the direction the team is going.
Well, they're identifying who they want to move forward with. He was a key piece of the team. He's going to be UFA and Wenberg. But I think he makes his line mates better. I don't know him, so I would like to assume he's a good guy, a good leader in the locker room, which is a big part as well of signing someone you want to stick around. And again, I think they're going to identify as a team. You got to identify your core pieces, your key pieces, and then you surround that core with players that are going to come in and out over the course of the next 2, 3, 4 years. As you push for, let's be honest, the Sharks aren't, and Mike's doing a great job, and Tom Holley and company. I have friends, you know, they want to talk Shark hockey. Are they going to go get someone? Are they going to get someone? Like, no, I don't think it's the time right now. I think you have to stay patient. Mm-hmm. We're ahead of schedule. But right now, I don't think it's the time to go all in, if you will, and go sign somebody that you don't need right now, because just to get in the playoffs and get beat in the first round is not the target here. The goal is to win a cup. And I think that they're staying on track with that. So starts with signing Wenberg. I don't know what's going to happen with Mario. There's a couple more pieces there that I think we're going to need to lock up. And then we move forward. And some guys are going to get left behind. Unfortunately, that's the business. But Wenberg is one of those guys that is now part of the core moving forward.
Yeah, Ruzy, that we are identifying core players moving forward. How much does that speak to the growth that's happened in just pretty much what was the calendar year of 2025?
Well, great growth. They're not thinking about tearing it down anymore. They're not thinking about developing assets for other teams like they did last year when they sent CeCe and they sent Granlund to Dallas for a big playoff run. They're thinking about keeping some of these guys. Mm-hmm. They're basically on the same track that Anaheim is on this year. Last year, Anaheim did the same thing. This year, they signed Mikael Granlund because they feel like they're right there to get in and to do something. So the Sharks are kind of on a similar path. And I think it's setting up for what's going to be a pretty much a Death Valley situation for anybody coming through the state of California in the next couple of years, because the Kings aren't going away either, in spite of the fact that Anze Kopitar is retiring. So you've got three teams once again that make it awfully difficult to win on the road against. And that's something that's going to be a great pleasure to a lot of Sharks fans when they see these teams coming in and cowering about the first 10 minutes like they have for so many years.
Boiler, we obviously just got the news that Shakir Mukhmadulin is injured once again, and I know that people want to bring up talk of injury prone, and I don't know, I feel that's a little bit premature, but I'm curious what you have seen in his game as well as Sam Dickinson, because I know everybody wants these guys to be complete players as of tomorrow. It's not how it works in the NHL, it's especially as defensemen. The other part of that is that I think that unfairly people compare every young talent to Macklin Celebrini and Will Smith and what they did in their first complete years, which is, I mean, I understand that's the standard, but it is a pretty tough standard to stack up to.
Yeah. For every Macklin Celebrini or Cale Makar or Lane Hudson in Montreal last year, there's 25 guys that are going to take time. And with they say, I don't know who they are, but they say that defense is the hardest position to learn at the NHL level. I think from the two guys you mentioned, what I've seen some good, I've seen some bad. Inconsistency is probably the word that comes to mind, but I see potential. And again, sticking with that 2, 3, 4 year target, you know, and maybe it's quicker than that, but they're going to be big pieces. Right now, I think they're growing, they're learning what to do, what not to do, how to play at the NHL level. I mean, they're not getting 82 games in, but they're going to get certainly a large amount of games, and how to prepare and be better. And so I like what I see, but to play at the NHL level and to be a really, not just an okay defenseman, to be a really good defenseman, you have to put in the work, watch video, and strive to be better. And that's what I want to see from those two guys the second half of the season.
Boiler, with Shakir, I feel like he makes a mistake and he gets tentative, whereas Sam Dickinson bites too hard and it seems like he doubles down on that. Is that typical of what you see with developing defensemen?
Yeah, and we're all different. There's a learning curve. Some guys will make a mistake and then you freeze up and you lock up and you don't want to make another mistake, or you'll be out of the lineup for the next 2 or 3 games. Then there's more the Dickinson approach, where you try to double down and And that can also backfire. It took me, what? It took me about 5 years to get a trade, to get a shift every night. Confidence is a big part of that. So I think learning game management to me is the big thing. Knowing, especially with Dickinson as a little bit more of an offensive defenseman, knowing when to jump in, when not. And yes, scoreboard is going to be part of that. But the other thing I want him to learn is, who are you on the ice with? Who are you on the ice against? If you're with Macklin Celebrini, jump away, because not only is he very good offensively, but he's a very sound defensive player. You know, and who are you playing against? Are you playing against, if you're playing against the top line, that may be one of those shifts where you pull back and you don't, you're, it's the 50-50s become, you stay away from that. So I think that's just game management, learning experience, and understanding game situations.
Ruzzi, I've been thinking about this year as the pleasant surprise being a consistent theme, whether it's been Colin Graf and the way that he has developed, or the depth scoring that's been there with an Adam Gaudette in his game, Pavel Regenda, you alluded to, and the way that he's played in his limited time coming up. I don't think that people saw Filip Kuryshev being as dynamic as he has been. And now that Igor Chernyshov has come into this lineup and shown what a freight train he can be, it's got everyone that much more excited. But I'm curious, who is your pleasant upside player that you've focused in on the most up to this point?
Well, that's kind of hard to pick. I'd have to say probably Colin Graf to a degree, only because he's an unsigned, he's an undrafted free agent, but he showed some of those signs last year. Mm-hmm. So maybe in recent games anyway, it's been Regenda, just because of his net front presence, because he's, he just steps right in and really makes a big contribution right away. But somebody else too, Tabatai Dellandrea. He's still a young player, and he's somebody that's providing pace. And that's something that the Sharks really desperately need through their third and fourth lines. He's somebody that provides that. He and Zach Ostapchuk down the middle make them a better team at center because of their development. But I think Dellandrea is taking a step forward in terms of the way he's killing penalties with Colin Graf often, and he wins some very key faceoffs. Now he's just got to get the offensive side going a little bit better. And I think that there's another guy that's becoming, instead of a spare part, he's becoming an important part of the team.
Yeah, Boiler, I want to ask you about Ryan Reeves, because there were some people who thought that his career was done, and some people said he would just be the enforcer type to protect Macklin and Will. But his presence on this team, as well as the way that he's played out there on the ice, I mean, he just seems like he understands what it takes. I'm curious just your thoughts watching him, and also the fact that he came into this with a bit of a chip on his shoulder after what he went through in Toronto.
Yeah. I've been in that situation. You definitely, when you are maybe feel like you are disposed of or let go, you have that chip on your shoulder, and I can see it in his game. The fourth line as a whole, Russo and I did the game the other day. Like when something kind of, the game starts to get awry a little bit, a little out of whack, he will often put the fourth line out there to calm things down. And their job is simple. They're supposed to get pucks deep. They're going to go bang some bodies. They're going to re-energize the crowd. Again, you're not expecting, they have chipped in with a goal here and there, which is always great. But I think they've done their job really well. And Reeves in particular is one of the few last enforcers in the game. And I think he's doing his job really, really well, keeping teams in check, keeping some of the players in check, knowing that if you're coming towards my guy, I'm going to take care of you. So he's, I think he's done a great job, and he's playing some decent minutes. The other night, he had a ton of minutes in the first period, a lot more than he probably expected to play. But I think that fourth line as a whole, just in general, they don't play a lot of minutes, but they're always very important to any team.
Ruzzi, I wanted to ask you about Igor Chernyshov, just because he plays with such a power that I don't think many of us were expecting from a player this young into his North American career. Obviously last year had some, incredible moments and played obviously with Michael Mesa, so people were excited about that. But, when he drives on the near post in particular, it seems like defenders don't know what to do. Is there anybody that particularly reminds you of? I know that Drew has said Mikko Rantanen, but I don't know. It's just that upright posture that he skates with. And once he takes about three strides, he's just tough to stop, A, and B, I feel like that upright nature gives him a longer time to make a decision to pass or shoot.
I don't know if he reminds me of anybody. I mean, he's got some characteristics that are reminiscent of some other guys. Maybe there's a little bit of a Rantanen style in him. Maybe there's a little bit of Patrick Laine in him, the way that he lets the puck go. But I'm just really amazed at his power at his age, because he's only, what, 19?
Yeah.
So he's a guy that, you know, he goes one-on-one, and as I remember, it was against Zeev Bouyam in the Minnesota game. He actually puts his stick over the top of Bouyam's stick and says, "I dare you to try to move it," and he couldn't. When he made the move, I didn't think he had time to do that. And when he went to the inside, then he was able to snap one in for a pretty important goal. This is a guy that's going to have a great career. And it's been interesting because I think he's probably fast-tracked a little bit more than they expected this season. I think when he first came here, he was just said, "Hey, I was happy to be on the Barracuda and, you know, making a contribution to them trying to win a Calder Cup," which, by the way, he still might do before the season is over. But, you know, I just think that right now he's, you know, playing with Macklin Celebrini. It's going to be interesting when Will Smith comes back. Because I'd imagine that Will and Macklin will be together. So does Chernyshov move to the left wing? Does Smith move to the left wing? Does Chernyshov get reassigned to another line? What happens? I think that's going to be one of the interesting factors. And, you know, you throw in the fact that you mentioned that he has some of that great chemistry and experience with Michael Misa.
Right.
If Misa gets back, they were line mates. Maybe they're another line that gets together. And then Wennberg slides into that 3C position where they probably have him slotted in for when the Sharks start challenging for the Stanley Cup. So it's an interesting problem to have, and it's a good one to have. But I just like where Chernyshov fits in terms of his hockey sense and his skill. But most importantly for me, his power.
Boiler, with Misa, he gets recalled by San Jose today. He obviously just played with Team Canada at the World Juniors. Yeah. A lot of social media was freaking out over his play, to which I think that's a little bit that. Well, okay, it's expected. We all overreact to every tournament of this style. But I think with Misa, people forget that he was playing at a fairly high level, and then he took an injury, but he had a goal and some points. You know, he wasn't playing a ton of games, hadn't played for a while, goes plays at this tournament. But I feel like the team wants to have him in the NHL lifestyle. I don't see him going back to juniors. They want him to do the weightlifting, the training, the schedule. What are the expectations that you have for Misa with the rest of this season?
Well, he's had a cup of coffee now where he's been the NHL level. But again, for every Macklin Celebrini, there's a Misa where it doesn't necessarily take off like a rocket ship and everything's a success, right? So he's got some learning to do. I don't know what they're going to do. Does he go back to, you know, and dominate? And, you know, what's that going to do? Or they keep him up and, like you said, keep him in the weight room, getting a little stronger, get him to play whenever, watch some games, watch some film, get him to feel comfortable at the NHL level. And for him, it's just, again, I wasn't a 19-year-old in the NHL, but at some point you have to believe that you can play there. And then eventually you have to believe that you can, I'll use the word dominate, but you can be better. And doesn't matter what age you are, you go through that. I remember my first camp, I was looking around like, you know, Pavel Bure and Scott Mellenby and all these guys. I was overwhelmed. And I'm not saying he is, but it took me a few years to realize, okay, I can be up here. But not only can I be up here, I can be better than some of these guys that I grew up watching on TV. So that's kind of what I want to see with him. The second half is mentally to turn up the volume, get some confidence in his play, and then use his God-given athletic ability, which he obviously has, to not just be satisfied with what has been given so far. Go earn more ice time. Go earn, make the coaches play you every single night. That's what I want to see from him.
And, you know, Ruzzi, with the way that Coach Warsawski and his staff have, you know, made Sam Dickinson earn that ice time, have made Shakir Mukhamudulin earn that ice time, they obviously have done a really good job of putting guys in positions to succeed. When guys get injured, they don't just bring up Quentin Musty immediately. It was they brought up Giles and put him in a bottom six role, or they brought up Cardwell and put him in a bottom six role. And only when Kurashev and Will Smith got injured did they bring up a Chernyshov to put him in a top six role. I mean, I feel like that's lending itself to the success that the Sharks are having. It's that A, guys are earning it, and B, they're being put in positions to succeed.
Well, that's true. And, you know, to a degree, it's what choices do you have as well? That's really important. You don't want to have a guy like Chernyshov recalled and have him play 5 minutes on a fourth line situation and kill a few penalties. Right. That's not going to help him him at all. Putting him with Macklin Celebrini showcases what abilities he's got. And, you know, it's going to be a fascinating thing to see what happens with Misa now, because he is a confident guy. The one thing the coaches say is he's got very good work habits. Mm-hmm. And that's something that you don't, you know, you don't necessarily have to, you don't have to teach with him. You don't want to teach with a young player. So maybe that'll keep him here. But you've got the other business side of things as to whether or not you want to have his contract, you know, kick in toward unrestricted free agency in 7 years. That's a much bigger issue that has nothing to do with Ryan Warsawski or Michael Misa. And all Michael can do and all the young players can do is just hang on to what they can control. Mm-hmm. And what they can control is what they do each and every day at practice, every day on the ice, make sure that they're coachable, which they all seem to be, are listening. And the other thing, you know, with people like Giles getting recalled, don't forget, you have to make sure that you have, I don't want to say hope. That's not the wrong, that's not necessarily the right word, but you want to reward the players that are your soldiers in the AHL. Mm-hmm. And remember that you're not forgetting about them, that you're giving them that opportunity to get some NHL time. And hey, let's face it, make some NHL money if you're on a two-way contract. But also when you go back to the American Hockey League, you know that you're an important part of the organization, and then you're going to give it your all to try to help that organization win a Calder Cup, which I think is really critical to development for some of these young players as well. So there's a lot of things at play there, but I think it's kind of an interesting story back to Misa as to exactly what they want to do contractually with him for the season, whether he plays in his 10th game, whether he stays here like Dan was alluding to, or whether they decide to send him back to junior because it's only a certain number of games now left in the year. And then mm-hmm. he can get to the Barracuda for the playoffs once Saginaw's season is over. So that's the other side of things too, where you can get maybe some of the best of both worlds. But, you know, either way they do it, they'll make the right decision with him. And I think that, you know, as Dan said, they're probably leaning toward keeping him here in the sense that he has such good work habits and being around the NHL players and working out with them is going to benefit him a little more, but we'll have to wait and see.
Ruzzi, is it okay for us to make comparisons to the 93-94 team? I mean, I know that that team had a worse start and it was only year three of the franchise existence, but there are some parallels, and it's hard not to go for that low-hanging fruit in terms of a season that has a remarkable turnaround. Now, that team obviously had a great and unexpected run, and this team is a way, way away from that team as of yet, but there are some similarities. I mean, I remember watching and listening to that team. It's hard for me not to make that comparison.
It's easy to get involved in that. I think it's a little bit early to really talk about it much. It's okay to note it mm-hmm. and to say, okay, wouldn't it be great if that happened? Yeah. But you can't definitively say it yet. I think that the next step is to have the team in a position where they're challenging for a playoff spot at the trade deadline. At the Olympic break. That's the next goal. Then after that, be in that position at the trade deadline. And then that's going to force Mike Greer's hand and make his job a little bit harder. Because then instead of just thinking about maybe selling off assets to get more draft picks, he's going to be thinking about adding players. So that's the other thing. You want to make the general manager's job a little bit harder there. And, and then if you make the playoffs, who knows, you're probably going to get, let's say they get the eighth spot right now, that'd be placing the Colorado Avalanche team with Cale Makar, Nathan McKinnon, and with cast of characters that kind of resembled the Detroit Red Wings back in 1994. So, you know, who knows what could happen, but I'll tell you what, if this team does make the playoffs, they will make it very difficult for another team to beat them.
Boiler, how does this team get these slow starts out of their system? Because I know it probably drives Ryan Warsawski mad. I don't blame him for it in the slightest, but he has to figure out what is the right button to push to get them ready, because those three wins they just had are sandwiched by a 7-2 blowout loss in Vegas and a 7-3 blowout loss at home versus Tampa, whereas they were shown to not be with those champion pedigree teams. Yeah. But they also have beaten some other really good teams this year. I mean, they beat Colorado, for instance, and they got hammered by Colorado, and they got hammered by Washington and Dallas, and obviously most recently Vegas and Tampa. So how do they get past that?
I mean, starts to a game. I'm not a coach. I would look at, am I seeing a pattern here? Maybe do I, again, putting my coach's hat on for a second, do I start the game with an aggressive forecheck, try to get the guys in on a 2-1-2 versus a 1-2-2? I'm getting very technical here, but mm-hmm. do I alter the way that we systematically that we play to get the games going? So I haven't watched every game this year. So, you know, I know coaches watch a ton of tape. So maybe that's something that they could look at as to, as a player, I want to play more aggressive. So maybe that's a way you kind of get things going, wake the guys up a little bit.
Yeah, Bruzy, is there anything you've seen in those slow starts? I mean, I know that it's easy to point to the big deficit, but that goes without saying. And I feel like you can't even tell when it's going to come either, because they've had so many other games against really high level opposition where they've been there right from the get go.
Well, if you're talking about individual games, I know that the coaching staff has a good idea just before they hit the ice for warmups, whether they're going to have it or not. Some of the best coaches always had that instinct. I remember Al Arbor used to say that about the New York Islanders. He'd say, I know if these guys have got it just before they go out for warmups, just by what I'm observing in the dressing room. And that's just human nature. You know, you have a whole bunch of things going on. The Sharks practice a little bit less than most of the other teams in the league because of the travel schedule. I mean, we've got a big trip coming out back east that starts in Washington and ends up in Tampa. You know, you have to fly all the way across the country. Normally the day before the game, the Sharks have tried to do it 2 days before the game when you can for time zone purposes, but that takes away a day, sometimes 2 days of practice. Yeah. So that means you have to make the most of what you have on the morning skates or in the video sessions. And so that's part of it. As far as starting the season goes, I think that the big thing, you know, with the 0-4-2 start this year was you look at the roster and you compare it to the year before. There were so many changes. It just took a while for these guys to get in sync and get a little bit more connected. One of those four C's that Ryan Warsofsky has up inside the dressing room as keys to the team. So I don't put too much into that. The fact that it didn't go 0-8-1 like it did in 93-94 or anything worse, as they did in a couple of years when David Quinn was coaching a much depleted roster, is fine. And I think that every team goes through it. You know what? Winnipeg has lost 11 out of 12 games, something like that. They won the President's Trophy the year before. So it happens to every team. You go through it and it makes you stronger as a unit. And I think that what you have to do is you have to minimize the bad times, minimize the bad periods or bad shifts. And that's something that the Sharks are developing. And that's the old word consistency that comes in there.
Boiler, how important is it that this team appears to be having fun and they appear to believe in each other? Because that, again, a year ago, it was great vibes at practice. Guys were putting on the brave face and they were always super pros, but they were not being rewarded. This year, the hard work is being rewarded and it's snowballing a bit. So I just, from your point of view, how much of an impact does that have?
Yeah, I mean, I played 18 years and I remember early on, wasn't having a ton of fun, but I realized later on in my career how important it is. Number one, you got to work hard, right? So if you can work hard and have fun, great. Obviously, when we're saying having fun, it doesn't mean being loose and in the sense of how you're playing or how hard you're working. Work ethic can be controlled on any given night, but you want to make sure that it's fun to go to the rink. You don't want to dread waking up in the morning and going, oh, geez, I got to go to practice, right? You want to coaches and leadership group, and you want to find ways to make it exciting for players to want to play. Practice needs to be fun sometimes. You're going to have your tough practices for sure. Every team deserves that. But I think you want to make sure guys want to come to work. You want to make sure guys work out, stick around, have fun, like each other. And, you know, that's everybody. That's the GM putting the team together. That's the coaches. And that's your leadership core and your leadership group, you know, doing things off the ice together, is something that builds character. It builds, this gelling, that eventually, I mean, you see that in playoff winning teams, that stuff can carry on.
And Ruzy, I would imagine, as you've seen every group of Sharks that have ever been through the franchise, that this team does have a little bit of a different vibe to it. Guys are that much tighter, it seems. And that's not speaking ill of any of the other recent teams. It's just that you can see compared to a year ago, 2 years ago, there's that much more spark in the room.
Well, what I'm looking forward to is something that happened in 1993-94. And that was when the last game was played, game 7 against the Toronto Maple Leafs at the old Maple Leaf Gardens, an amazing series that came within a crossbar of seeing the Sharks go to the next round. Artur Zerbe got up inside that dressing room and he said, this is the best team I ever played on. And he played on some really great teams in Europe that won a lot more games. But he said, this is the best team I ever played on. And we're seeing some feelings of that inside this current Sharks dressing room, whether it's Ryan Warsawski taking everybody aside and telling him how much he appreciated their effort when they came back against Pittsburgh, whether it was, Ryan Reeves taking the time to take these guys out to a Broadway show when they went to New York, whether it's, even last season, the whole sleepover bobblehead that we've got going on with Will Smith, Macklin Celebrini, and Tyler Toffoli, the history also with the organization, with the young stars like Smith and Celebrini living with Patrick Marleau and Joe Thornton, respectively. All of that tells me that that's what you want to see at the end of the year. You want to have that guys get up and say, this is the best team I ever played on. And we're seeing some signs of that. It's just so exciting. And you don't know how the second half of the year is going to go. Wins and losses probably play into that a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think that what we're developing here is an age group of players, a group of people in the same age group that knows they're going to be around here for a long time. The guys that are older are only too happy to mentor them because they just appreciate the professionalism that they have for their young age. And you've also got, guys that may not be here anymore, realizing that if they play well, they're going to be sent to a good situation as they did last year with people like Granlund and CeCe and also Jake Walman. So those are the things that develop and start to build like a little savings account. The Sharks are putting a few bucks into that savings account every week. The interest is compounding, and all of a sudden they're going to wake up, look at their bank account, and realize that they've got a pretty good stash of cash in there. And I think that that's what they're trying to do here in a way that's going to make the fan base happy and make the players inside that dressing room happy. But I think that for me, the goal is I want those guys to stand up at the end of the year and say, this is the best team I ever played on. And, back to, the hard work part and all that stuff and having fun. Igor Larionov once said, you don't work hockey, you play hockey. And so you have to make sure that there's some play in there too. And we're seeing that with the enthusiasm of people like Smith and Celebrini and so forth. So all of that kind of a little bit free verse there, but I think it all comes together into a nice, very tasty stew that people are going to like to sample.
All right. Ruzy's hungry. It's official. But gentlemen, I will let you go. Thank you so much for your time and I'll see you soon. All right.
All right.
See you guys. Thanks, Ted.
This podcast can be found on demand anytime on the Sharks Plus SAP Center app. All music by Yogi Yend.